This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 10th at 12.07 p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like a pro sports owner will say to taxpayers, you know, thanks for the offer, but we'll pay all of the costs associated with our new stadium.
And leave a ton of money on the table. Right. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at those snollygosters or shrewd politicians and all their activities in the world of Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Of course, we're talking about the Columbus Crew. We've saved the crew, but the taxpayers are going to spend at least $100 million in tax money to help set up their new stadium.
Yeah, some great stories out of Columbus this week on how there was a secondary budget to include all the costs that the city leaders did not cop to in the beginning. Shocking that politicians would hide that, I know. Anyway, about this week's podcast coming up, is the petition drive to repeal the nuclear bailout law in trouble?
But first, the people in Dayton this summer urged Governor DeWine to do something after the mass shooting that killed 9 people and wounded 27 others.
Is to say to them that we love you, we care very, very deeply.
Governor DeWine promised to do something. Now, just more than 2 months after the shooting, Governor DeWine's doing something, but nobody seems really happy with it.
They really don't. In the days after the shooting, DeWine surprised some when he called for tougher gun regulations, namely universal mandatory background checks on gun sales and a so-called red flag law to take guns away from people deemed to be dangerous. But when it came to putting the proposal in writing in the form of legislation, those two things, mandatory background checks and red flag law, not in that proposal.
But DeWine maintains his bill meets his three requirements.
One, it must be constitutional. It must respect both the Second Amendment and Ohioans' due process rights. Two, it must make a significant impact on the safety of all Ohioans and save lives. And three, it must be able to pass in the General Assembly.
The governor should have put number three at the top, because in the end, that was what drove this legislation. Ohio lawmakers were not going to pass tougher gun laws. Instead, DeWine's proposal basically toughens current state law in some areas. For example, it would expand the ability of police to involuntarily commit people, to include people addicted to drugs or alcohol. Then the state could temporarily take away their guns.
When it comes to mandatory background checks for private sales, including ones at gun shows, the legislation would make those background checks voluntary, and it tries to make the background check system work a little better.
Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley, a Democrat, was on the stage when people chanted "Do something" to her and Governor DeWine. She says the governor's plan should have included mandatory universal background checks, something Ohioans overwhelmingly support.
9 out of 10 Ohioans call for a background check. There's not a background check in this bill. So, you know, I think that that is something that the legislature's either they're going to have to decide and the voters are going to come to them with it, and they're going to have to listen to the public. That's what we're drawn to do, we're supposed to do. And, you know, when you have that many Ohioans agreeing on something, something's got to give in that legislature.
Whaley referred to a potential ballot question in 2020 that would ask Ohio voters to approve mandatory background checks.
Joining us now to digest all of this is Ann Fisher, host of All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, also a podcast from WOSU Public Media. Ann, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Thank you very much.
You had the governor and Mayor Whaley on your show this week. Let's start with the governor. How does he defend this legislation compared to what he proposed this summer?
He says it's superior.
To
what he proposed back in August. He said that because they're expanding the pink slip law, that's taking people away from the guns. In the other case, it would have been a 3-day wait before you even could take the gun away from the people. So it's taking people away from the guns. Of course, there's issues with the idea that they're focusing on mental health, alcohol and drug addiction, that it may target people like that, people who are in those circumstances, more than maybe other people could slide under the radar. But it will take people away. It puts them away for 72 hours, and that takes them away from the guns during a critical time.
It's basically a red flag law for people
a weird way. I get that. It's taking the people, it's putting them out of commission instead of taking the gun away from them.
Where are they going to put them? We're short beds as it is.
And that's part of one of his one of the things that's not necessarily in this legislation, but is part of the state budget and part of his overall thrust is to expand access to services in hospitals. Right now, the only thing hospitals have room for are criminals who are being held temporarily in hospitals for mental health purposes. This would expand that. It's supposed to be funded. And everybody, the Ohio Hospital Association is saying there are enough beds to go around. Hospitals in rural areas are less sure about that.
So what exactly changed since his press conference where he said he was going to, quote, do something? I mean, did he entirely misgauge the legislature?
I don't know. I mean, because right off the bat, people were saying, really? You think this is going to get through the Ohio General Assembly? Why would you even propose this, knowing the Ohio General Assembly is so, for the last 20 years, has been expanding gun rights? Why would they ever approve something like a red flag law or anything like that? No one really knows. He just says that he said at the time that he was going to start to consult with the Ohio General Assembly and other stakeholders in all of this, and this is what they came up with. And he says it's superior.
Yeah, the bottom line is I think he was hoping that the shooting would prompt the legislature to do something.
I think a lot of people felt that
maybe
that at the time. We had this discussion a lot at the time. I was a little more pessimistic than most that the legislature would be moved. I mean,
we still don't know, though.
Yeah. Right.
We still don't know if this will pass. Yeah. We don't know that.
It's certainly an attempt to put the brakes on the pro-gun legislation that's been coming out, even if it's not rushing in the other direction that Democrats would want.
Well, yeah, I suppose you're not going to see a lot of pro-gun rights, but there's not a lot left to do on that score. And by the way, they're introducing it in the Senate, where it's probably going to have a little more friendly reception. The House is going to be the big hurdle in the long run, much more conservative.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not surprised, but it doesn't seem like maybe he tried behind the scenes. The governor tried behind the scenes to get lawmakers to come along with this. But he it was just a few days after the shooting, a bold statement, 17 points. Most of it dealt with mental health treatment. But he did have universal background checks and this red flag law that is stronger than what he proposed here. This is more bureaucratic. But the red flag law would have taken away guns from dangerous people. It was stronger than this. But he didn't expend really any public political capital trying to get his original plan passed.
He also thinks that the universal background checks won't be necessary because it sort of puts the onus on people who are selling guns, even privately, to have to check, that you have to say you checked the background or suffer the consequences if something happens with that gun that's untoward.
You know what that reminds me of? When you go to the fireworks store the week before the 4th of July and you sign a little form that says, I'm going to blow off these firecrackers in Pennsylvania, not in Ohio.
Yeah.
This is a political win for DeWine, right? I think it is. He tried to make the case for these, not extreme, but stronger gun regulations, and now he's coming back as the pragmatic Republican that he just couldn't.
It's not a win until it gets enacted,
but even
until he's signing it.
Even at this step, he seems responsive to the more conservative wing of the legislature.
No, he's still annoyed the gun rights folks, and I think he just...
You still think this is
all he can expect to get, honestly. I mean, I think he's a pragmatic politician, not necessarily a pragmatic Republican, pragmatic politician. He wanted to do something. This is something. But this is all he can get, if that. I still think that this is going to get watered down even more. And it may actually, a prediction, there will be a pro-gun
element of
this.
To assuage the concerns.
It could be something with concealed carry. It could be something with something else.
We should say that you had DeWine and Nan Whaley on your show earlier this week. On that same show, you had House Minority Leader Amelia Sykes, who had a very different interpretation of this than DeWine.
Yeah, they've had Democrats have introduced bills into the House already. There's a handful of them pending that the House hasn't even started or may never get to hearings on at this point because Larry Householder, who's famously known for blowing up a TV during one of his campaign ads,
shooting it.
Yeah,
I'm Larry Householder. I'm a pro-gun, pro-life Christian conservative. But they're in for a fight. Because where I come from, we stick to our
good aim.
It's a fun ad.
Amelia Sykes says this is barely, Dan Whaley's calling it a good start. That's all it is a start, if your prediction comes true. And Amelia Sykes is very disappointed in it and thinks that they should be looking at more. But the reality of the situation is there's nothing to force Ohio General Assembly members to do that because, as we well know, it's a gerrymandered General Assembly. They don't have to respond to the 99% or 98% of Ohioans who support mandatory or universal background checks.
But they will have to, because this group is out there collecting signatures.
Right. Ohioans for gun safety.
Yeah, they're out there collecting signatures to put the universal background check mandatory, not voluntary, mandatory universal background check on the ballot in 2020. The way this process works is they collect a certain number of signatures, a lot.
About 125,000 to start.
That goes to the legislature. They either pass this bill, in essence, as they propose, make it law, or this group has to go back out and collect the same number of signatures from different people to get it on the ballot. Mm-hmm. My guess is they'll do it. There'll be money behind it. And then this is on the ballot in 2020.
Right. Mm-hmm. Kind of a big year.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, I mean, the legislature in the past has passed legislation, payday lending, that faced a ballot issue.
Medical marijuana.
Exactly. Yeah. So will they do this with background checks? I doubt it. I think this goes to the ballot, and we'll see how the voters
An interesting analogy from the other side: in 2004, when Ohio's gay marriage ban was put on the ballot, it helped carry Bush to a win in his second term, helped him earn a second term. You wonder if the opposite could happen here, if there is a gun control proposal that could motivate Democrats in 2020, get them to the ballot in a key swing state like Ohio.
Democrats, independents,
right? What would that mean
for
Donald Trump in a state that he very possibly needs to win the election?
What if it motivates gun rights and conservative voters saying,
well, that's not what happened in 2004.
But they've motivated conservatives in 2004 to come out. Gun rights supporters tend to come out in larger numbers and be more motivated
Except
to vote than gun control supporters.
The critical number is the percentage of Ohio voters who say they support universal background checks.
But do they vote on that opinion?
Right. That's the question.
In the past, they have not voted solely on that opinion.
Right. And maybe times are changing.
Is there any timeline at all for this legislation? You say it goes to the Senate first, but there's no hard date, right? It's just when it moves, it moves?
I believe it's been introduced. And no, I mean, Senate President Larry Abhoff has made a commitment to start hearings on it. So it'll usually in the Senate, it's a little more thoughtful. They take a little bit more time, but that's because they're usually managing stuff that the House has already worked on.
Fewer TVs being shot.
Each week that passes means is 1 week farther away from the Dayton shooting.
Which always lowers the sense of urgency.
Unless there's another shooting. God forbid. Mm-hmm. Ann Fisher, host of All Sides with Ann Fisher, weekdays 10 a.m. to noon on 89.7 NPR News, and anytime, wherever you get your podcast, and through the WOSU Public Media mobile app. Ann, thanks for joining us on Snollygoster.
You're very welcome.
We'll be right back.
How do you turn what you love into a career? On season 2 of the Rivet podcast from WOSU, hear firsthand from students translating their interests into jobs without college. Listen to This American Graduate Project as we highlight the next generation of workers in the state's top industries of agriculture, insurance, and healthcare. Support for the Rivet podcast series comes from COSI. Subscribe now at wosu.org/rivet, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Snollygoster. The group that wants to ask voters to repeal Ohio's energy bailout law has a little more than a week left to collect the 266,000 signatures they need to get the question on next year's ballot. This week, there is a sign the petition drive might be in trouble.
You know the story. Groups that support the bailout of 2 nuclear power plants and 2 coal plants have gone all out to convince people not to sign the petitions. Now, backers of the repeal have gone to federal court to ask for more time. The group claims it's being harassed by the pro-bailout groups, and that has cut into the 90 days the group has to collect signatures, and now they want another 90 days.
You know, they have a point. This has been very difficult. It's an unprecedented campaign, keeping them from collecting signatures, either through TV ads or, more importantly, in their case, their argument is the petition blocker is trying to convince folks on the street not to sign the petition from the guy next to him. But if you're going to ask for an extension on a deadline, what does that mean? It means that you're not going to make your deadline. So that's what I think
their argument's pretty weak, honestly. Aside from the woman slapping the phone out of the man's face in Dublin, I don't really think there's a lot of harassment, at least that's documented, going on. I would be surprised if there's enough for a judge to step in and say these people deserve more time.
They are arguing that there was a delay in the attorney general's approving of the language and things like that, and also,
but that's what triggers the 90-day deadline.
Yeah,
so they didn't lose any time there,
but that's part of their argument, is the state bureaucracy slowed them down. Then also the harassing slowed them down as well. Now, if they were able to prove some of their allegations, one of their most serious allegations is that the group that supports the bailout, or groups associated with them, are buying petitions from the anti-bailout folks for more than what they would get if they turned the petitions in. It's sort of like they buy the petitions off the guy in the street, and they throw them away. So that's illegal.
This is pretty confusing. So if the group that wants to repeal the nuclear bailout, right, if they send petitioners out into the field and they're talking to people saying, hey, let's put this on the ballot, yeah. Pro-bailout people, right, who don't want it on the ballot, yeah. are walking up to petition workers and saying, hey, I'll give you $1,000 for that book of petitions instead yeah. of you turning them in.
We don't know what the allegation is.
That is illegal? I'm not surprised if it's illegal.
No, but it's illegal, but that's what they're claiming is happening. Because, you know, these petition takers, they're professionals. They get a certain number of dollars for each signature they get. Mm-hmm. And so what the allegation is, these other folks are coming in and say, we'll beat that price. And they'll take it and toss it. But again, it's an allegation. I've seen no really objective evidence that this is happening. So, and don't forget, there's another lawsuit out there too that says that this shouldn't be on the ballot at all because this increase in electric bills that would bail out the nuke plants, the supporters of that bailout now say it's a tax.
Yeah.
And taxes are not subject
referendum. Yeah, right, which they did not claim during the effort to pass the law. Shocking.
We'll know we won't know by this time next week, but we'll know, you know, a week or so after that how they did with the signatures.
Speaking of unscrupulous political moves, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award. That's where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week.
This week, it's the National Basketball Association.
Huh?
Wow.
That's a surprise.
All right.
Who predicted that?
For some background, the NBA is huge in China. China is a huge market. We did the math this morning. More people play basketball in China than live in the United States of America.
And more people watched the NBA Finals last year in China than in the U.S.
Experts estimate the league makes $4 billion, with a B, billion dollars a year just in China.
That's a little bit of coin at stake there. Some more background. Up until this past week, the NBA said it valued its players and coaches' free expression. Players and coaches often take political stands, especially guys like Greg Popovich, coach of the Spurs, Steph Curry, who has been a target of Donald Trump's tweets in the past. They frequently denounce racial injustice and criticize the president. And the NBA, at least until now, had said it's okay with that.
Well, then the general manager of the Houston Rockets, the most popular team in China, because they had Yao Ming, a very popular Chinese player, played for the Rockets, that GM tweeted support for the Hong Kong pro-democracy protesters. Daryl Morley wrote, quote, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." Pretty tame, but pointed.
Very tame. I mean, that is... That being controversial is almost
pretty
controversial.
Bland.
Right, but the Chinese, obviously... not happy. Chinese entities immediately started canceling contracts with the Rockets. The owner of the Rockets immediately said Morey does not speak for the team, and the NBA's original statement called the comment, quote, regrettable, but still maintains its support of free speech.
And then just today, I think it was just today, a reporter from CNN was trying to ask a couple of players from the Rockets what they think about this controversy, and a PR person from the NBA interrupted the exchange before the players could answer.
And two of the most outspoken people in the NBA, Greg Popovich, who I just mentioned, the head coach of the Spurs, Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, both declined to comment as well.
Money talks.
If that Daryl Morey thing had not happened, I would bet either one of those two, Kerr or Popovich, would be speaking out in favor of Hong Kong, in favor of the protesters now. A lot of money at stake.
Yep. Free speech isn't free. So for that reason, the association, the NBA, gets our award for Snollygoster of the Week.
There we go, NBA. Congrats. And if you have a suggestion for next week, please email that to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes. And as always, just tell your friends about us. Word of mouth helps. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.